Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hot Spots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello and welcome to Hotspots. Today we'll be discussing the current political state of affairs we're facing in this country, and specifically how a very important constituency, Latinos, are viewing all of this, including the rising phenomena of Christian nationalism. My guest is J.J. Galvez, a community leader and Democratic candidate for California State Assembly District 71, in Orange and Riverside counties. JJ immigrated to the United States from Honduras on a student visa in 2010. He worked his way through college and became a United States citizen in 2024. JJ lives in Silverado Canyon, a fire-prone mountain community in Southern California, where he serves as treasurer of the Silverado Majesco Recreation and Parks District. Professionally, he has built a career in strategy and operational roles across tech startups and growth stage companies. His work focuses on strengthening democratic institutions, expanding opportunity, and building inclusive communities across cultural, religious, and political lines. Welcome, JJ. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Kay. Really excited to be here.
As you know, there is so much change and upheaval going on in our country now, and people are wondering, how are we going to get out of this mess? Mm-hmm. Are Latinos who supported Trump in the last election in 2024 turning away from him? I've read that more than half of Latino men supported Trump in that election. Mm-hmm. And if things are changing, why? How are attitudes changing and in the political sphere for the Latino community?
Yeah, things are changing. We're going to have a real opportunity. I think the Latino vote is going to come back in force to vote Democratic in the midterms. But I think we need to learn our lessons from what's happened in the past, understand why over 50% of Latino men voted for Trump. And so I'd actually like to take us back to just offer my perspective on where some of that comes from. And as you mentioned in the intro, I'm an immigrant. I'm a proud immigrant. I was born in Honduras, which is a small country in Central America. And I lived the first 18 years of my life there, coming to the U.S. and on a student visa in 2010. When I look at this problem, of course, I don't pretend to speak on behalf of certainly all Latinos there. While there are strong cultural similarities across different countries, different Hispanic countries, Latin America is a big place. And so there's nuance, and that nuance gets translated into the heritage that different Hispanic Americans have. What I can speak from is how a country like Honduras, where I grew up in, which is a country where 60 to 70% of the population lives beneath the poverty line, how religion has really influenced the way that so many Hispanics look at the world, and then that how that related to that shift that we saw in favor of Trump in this broader context of the rise of Christian nationalism. So Honduras is a deeply religious country. I was actually amazed. I got the chance to go visit my family after not seeing them for 2 years, just a few weeks ago, and just looking at things through the lens of now somebody who's really involved in running for office, I was amazed at just the amount of Christian messaging that was all over the place. You are at a toll booth and there's bumper stickers that say, thank you, Jesus. We're on the highway. There's a mechanic shop on the side of the road that has the Star of David as its company logo. And that deep religiosity, I think, has fed a couple of strongly held values that a lot of Hispanics have. And that's the view of family, the importance of family, and the view of family in a very traditional way between a man and a wife. And then the view that the man is the head of the household, that the man is the economic provider, and that the man is supposed to protect, and there's strength with that. And the toxic aspect of that is what we see revealed itself in machismo, right? Which is the man can do whatever he wants and he's fully excused. And so I think religion taps into some of those worldviews. And it's why I think it was Ronald Reagan that said that Hispanics are Republicans. So they just don't know it yet. And so then the question becomes, okay, but they don't historically vote Republican. They vote historically Democrat. And that's why I was so surprised when so many from the community decided to gravitate towards Trump. And the reason why Hispanics, despite those values, have traditionally voted Democratic is because one of the core values of the Democratic Party is that we believe in diversity, in inclusivity, in building a pluralistic society. We celebrate those things. We welcome immigrants. We believe that makes us stronger, America as a melting pot. And so when somebody's coming to this country as an immigrant, or if you're the child of immigrants, you're going to support the people that have supported you. And that's why I think the majority of Hispanics tend to vote Democrat. Now, that broke recently. And the reason why that broke, in my view, has to do with the underlying economic conditions that led people to stop believing in the American dream. And we can talk more about that and go deeper in there. Certainly have a lot of thoughts there and a bunch of other things. But in a nutshell, going back to your question, why so many Hispanic men gravitated towards Trump, I think Trump presenting himself as somebody of strength that feeds into sort of that machismo prejudice. If you as a man, as a Hispanic man, are not able to provide for your family as you were before, then you're more susceptible to a populist that taps into some of your prejudices.
How are Hispanics reacting now to Trump's mass deportation attempts, the ICE and Border Patrol violence, Gestapo tactics, cruelty, and everything we see coming down? Is this affecting people's attitudes?
Yeah, absolutely it is. It's, you know, if the reason why so many Hispanics gravitated towards Trump is because there's a base layer of economic stability that hadn't been met. There's even a baser layer beneath that, which is basic safety. And just going back to the importance of family and protecting your family, when the safety of your family is at risk, when people are coming after your kids, after your parents, that's number one. And the amount of cruelty that's been happening has completely shifted how most Hispanics look at things. I mean, I'll give an example of actually a Honduran American who was caught up in an operation in Charlotte in the Carolinas. And he is an American citizen and he voted for Trump. And he was outside of a Honduran restaurant picking up food and he got approached by ICE. And they held him for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, like really strongly, just basically harassing him and saying, okay, show us the paper, show us the paper. And he's got, here's my real ID. Don't you guys know that to get a real ID, you have to be legal? And, but they were just like looking up all this information. And finally, they let him go. Okay. 5 minutes after that happens, another ICE patrol stops him. And this is all in video. Stops in there upside the car. He's telling them, you guys should stop me. What's going on? They take out the stick. They break his window. They pull him out of the car. They throw him onto the ground. They're on top of him. They're harming him. And then same process, right? They look him up. Okay, yeah, he's good. Good to go. And this guy gets then interviewed at a local Hispanic station over there. And he goes, I don't know why the F did I vote for Donald Trump. Because the reason why he voted was because of the things that I was saying before, because he probably has some prejudices that look at family as a traditional sort of husband and wife thing, to look at himself as the strong man. He sees himself identified by the strong, quote unquote, because we know he's not really strong. People that tend to portray themselves as strong typically are really empty inside. That's the case with Donald Trump, but looks at that. And then because you're flirting economically, then you become susceptible to those things. But now, like, no, this is not what it's about. So I anticipate that we're going to see a huge shift back to Hispanics voting Democratic, which is great, but we have to be ready for it. I'm happy to talk more about what that means.
How does Christian nationalism fit into this picture? And I know you and I had chatted a bit about that, how it differs from real Christianity. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's really effective ways that voices within the Democratic Party can talk about this. The core message of Christianity is a message of radical love. It's Jesus, the Sermon of the Mount. It's love thy neighbor. It's welcome the stranger, feed the hungry. Who am I to judge? And unfortunately, a lot of institutional Christian religion has forgotten about those things and has hyper-obsessed over two issues, abortion and LGBTQ. And because you think about a lot of people that are coming from a country like Honduras or Mexico or other countries, because they're coming from a place that has so many problems, religion is oftentimes used as a security blanket. And a security blanket then says, okay, this is in a world that's fast changing, I need something to hold on to. And these are the values that my church is telling me that I align myself with. And so then I end up feeling that. But then in the midst of that, I forget about that core message of Jesus. And with those, I think there's opportunities for us as Democrats and as anybody who is concerned about what's going on in the country and the rise of Christian nationalism, regardless of your political affiliation, to talk about Christianity in its true core sense. And it's, for example, in the case of abortion, the greatest gift that God gave us is free will. It's the ability to choose. Even Mary, when the Archangel Gabriel came down, even Mary said, I'm a servant of God, so let it be done. Let it be done, right? I have a choice. I let it be done. So abortion is not, we're not pro-death. We're pro-choice. We're pro-free will. And then with the case of LGBTQ, again, it goes back to the core message of Jesus. Jesus never talks about that. But what Jesus does talk about is not even tolerating your neighbor, but loving your neighbor. And you had a guest at one of your recent episodes. You guys were talking about trans issues. And I loved what she had to say, which was, if you don't know, how can I be an ally to a trans person? Well, ask that trans person, what do you need from me? And if you don't know a trans person, make it a point to find one. Like, building those interpersonal connections, relationships in real life, remind us of our shared humanity, and then remind us that we're all children of God and that we should love one another, as was the message of Jesus. So I think that's the kind of Christianity that there's an opportunity for us to really be highlighting, and it aligns really nicely with the core values of the Democratic Party.
I agree with that. I think so too. Let's talk a little bit about why you're running and what you hope to achieve when you're elected to the California Assembly.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it goes back to, you know, why going back to one of the things I was previously talking about. We're going to have an opportunity, for example, with Hispanics. Hispanics are going to come back in force and vote Democratic, but we've got to be ready for that. And we've got to, number one, have policy prepared that affects that population specifically. And this looks like comprehensive immigration reform. Obviously, that's at the national level. I'm running for state assembly, so I'll talk more about that in a minute. But I think it's important that we're ready to deliver on those things. Number two, it's how we talk. We need to have more voices that show Hispanics that from a values perspective, we are aligned. And number three, is the toughest problem, the critical problem, which then goes into the why I'm running for state assembly. And it's the core reason why so many Hispanic voters gravitated towards Trump. Yeah, there's things specific towards Hispanic voters that I'm just talking about the impact of religion and machismo and these different things. The core reason that is shared across all demographics that gravitated toward them is economic pain. And it's the fact that over the past several decades, we've had a growing gap in income. Just to give an example, in California specifically, in the 1960s, to buy a home adjusted for today's dollars, adjusted for inflation, the price was about $160,000. Today, it's about $800,000 to $900,000. Wages have not kept up with the same pace that costs have gone up with. And so then that's created a situation where people are no longer believing in the American dream, where people no longer believe that their children's lives will be better than their own. And that's why we become susceptible to populist messages, to somebody that comes in and creates a villain and says, I have all the solutions. So I get so excited about running for state assembly and serving in state assembly, because I think that in California, we have a golden opportunity to tackle that. And the reason for that is because, number one, California has an incredible amount of resources. We're a top five, top 10 economy in the world. And number two, we have an incredibly united political body as Democrats in the state. And so we can do things here, big, bold things that try to tackle the drivers of costs of living, that try to build an economy that works for all, not just for some of us, in ways that we can't at the federal government because we don't have the leverage there. So we can take the resources, we can take the unity to advance these things, to bring down the cost of housing, to create more opportunities for job growth, jobs that are resilient to automation, to AI. And I just get so excited about bringing that kind of energy to contribute. And in that way, I think help us heal as not just a state, but as a country.
Are there specific creative solutions that you'll be trying to advance?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing, and I invite everybody to, if they're more interested, to keep up to date, to go to our website, jjgalvez.com, and sign up to stay informed on this. But we are working on a series of community forums where we're actually going to be workshopping solutions alongside the community to the different drivers of cost. So we have our first one coming up on housing. We'll be doing one on childcare, transportation, healthcare, insurance, all the different drivers that feed into the cost of living. But I do want to talk about just, you know, in the case of opportunity, one thing that we're trying to do is reduce the costs, but we're also trying to increase the amount of opportunity that exists. In the case of our district, I am thinking about ways in which we can incentivize more job growth, specifically in sectors that are resilient to automation and AI. And so nursing, for example, is a great example. In nursing, the lack of nurses contributes to the cost of healthcare. So it's a driver for the cost of healthcare. Okay, how can we get more nurses? Nurses are great because it's a good paying job and it's resilient for automation. So what are the blockers that we have to get more nurses? And so I'm working on ways where we can have better coordination between nursing schools and hospitals, because oftentimes the bottleneck is training. There's this concept of preceptor nurses that are nurses that have to train people that are coming up. And in order for you to become a nurse, you have to go through the training program. But if you're a nurse, you're already working really hard, you're tired. So can we have an incentive program where we offer some sort of monetary incentive for you to take on, you know, work as a preceptor? That would be tackling a bottleneck along the supply chain to create more nurses, to create more opportunity. So it's going to be those kinds of things. But ultimately, you know, the funnest part, and I had no idea that I was going to be running for office a year ago. I just got involved as a volunteer, showing up to protests, showing up to rallies, getting involved with the community, with the treasurer of the board. And the funnest part about running for office has honestly knowing that now it's my job to be thinking about these things, that it's no longer just a curiosity of, oh, I wonder why housing is so expensive in California. But actually, no, I need to know, because I am being charged, hopefully in the future, by my constituents to go to state legislature and to try to pass legislation and address regulation that unblocks innovation and opportunity in the economy.
I wish you all the best in your campaign, and I want to thank JJ Galvin for being here and sharing your insights about how Hispanics are viewing the situation and how we can encourage our leaders to tune in and work to address things that really matter. not just talk, but action that actually accomplishes positive change, which is what Democrats are about.
Yeah.
And right now, with everything going on, it's especially crucial to keep protesting and speaking out. The people have momentum and are making progress because our fellow Americans in Minneapolis and Maine and Portland and elsewhere around the country are standing up to Trump's unrestrained actions, cruelty, unconstitutional acts. Too many to articulate in one little sentence, but it's just become overwhelming, his blatant attacks on our civil liberties and our freedoms. And this will stop when enough of us say no to this madness. So thank you so much for being out there and running, and let's get on with it. See you next time on Hotspots. Thank you.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hotspots is a production of the United American Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericannetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire on United American Network.